Route 616,
fuck Disney,
you're home.
And holla Madrid.
Holla Madrid. Fuck Dan. As you can see, Dan isn't here, so opening up on a strong note. Welcome to your home for all fans of Marvel Main Continuity. This is episode 37. We've been doing this a long time now, of Route 616. It's going to be crazy when we get in like the 50s. But yeah, we have a pretty interesting week, actually. A pretty solid week, too, of comics this time, which is kind of a nice refresher after the last little while. We have a Surgeon Fury issue to start off today with issue number 10, where they go to Okinawa. And then we have two issues of Tales of Suspense, issues number 57 and 58, one of which is important. And then we are going to end off with the Amazing Spider-Man Annual, the very first one. I guess both are important of suspense. I forgot what the second one was when I was saying that. But
no, it's not important at all.
Okay, I wasn't.
It's just an ad for them putting Captain America into suspense going forward.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, it's a good issue, but if you don't read it, you miss absolutely nothing except for setup for Spider-Man Annual.
I was going to say you miss a lot of your chameleon, Mark, but anyway, we'll get to that later. So, today we're going to open up with Sergeant Fury and Sound Commanders, issue number 10. A series, personally one of my favorites, and Bill's said one of their favorites as well. I think we've ranked it like...
I'm starting to sour on it.
Starting to sour? Honestly. Okay, we'll get into that, I guess.
Because it's just...
a lot of the same?
They're fine, but the other comics are getting better now. And so reading the same thing over and over again is getting tiring.
I think I'm still at a point where the other comics aren't good enough for me yet for this title still not to like leave the top three, but I think we're getting close to that point.
Yeah, same with me. It's still top three, but I can just feel that, you know.
Iron Man's getting close.
I was just going to cite Iron Man. Iron Man's getting close, and...
Thor was on a roll before that last issue.
Yes, and you see, I have the advantage of knowing what's coming with Thor, and Thor gets back on that roll.
Well, that's good. I hope it does.
Because even that last issue wasn't actually bad. It was just the same stuff that they've done too much. It kind of had the same problem that Fury's starting to have, and that I feel like I've already read it.
Yeah. Fair enough. There is aspects that can feel samey, so... makes sense. But anyway,
the last couple issues, some of the choices they've made with the stories for Fury, probably trying to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Make it worse, which we'll get to when we finish this one, because I have thoughts on this issue.
Yeah, possibly trying a little too hard at times, too. Anyways, issue number 10 of Surgeon Fury. I just looked at I didn't know the average rating for this one was so low, so that's interesting. So I guess you're not the only one. Issue number 10. Stan Lee and Dick Guyer are still on this title as the artist. He has taken over from Jack Kirby for, like, this is like his fourth issue now, I think. This cover is done by Jack Kirby, Dick Guyer. The inks are done by George Russo's. Sam Rosen is on letters. And this is a July 1964 release, a 22-page story. And I'm going to open up with this title today. The title of the story, of course, is On to Okinawa. So, let us begin. I had to scroll quite a ways to get to the synopsis there. Captain Sawyer orders the Howling Commandos to train for an amphibious landing, and he personally oversees the exercise. On the way back to base, Sawyer lays out their next mission. G2, in brackets Army Intelligence, dropped someone onto Okinawa to evaluate the Japanese defenses before the Allied invasion. His luck held until he reached the shore for pickup by submarine, where he was wounded and captured. Nick Fury's squad has 72 hours to get from England to Okinawa, find the spy, break him out, and get off the island. Which, by the way, a ridiculous timeline.
Okay, I'm actually going on that subject. I'm going to cut in there because it's not 72 hours. The summarizer made a small mistake. It was 72 hours from the time the guy got captured.
Yeah, that's it. It
then they
like
fucked around
it?
In the field for like a day. So really, they have like 36 hours. And Sawyer mentions once that they have less than 72 hours now, and then Stan forgets about it, and it's just 72 hours going forward. But he took them into the field and wasted their time on an exercise, then made them walk like 20 miles back to camp out of spite before telling them that they had to go on a mission with an urgent timeline.
Yes, as
that
you
he
do,
knew about.
Yeah. Stan and his continuity. I gotta love it. But yes, they have that long because that's when the carpet bombing will begin if they're not back in, by that time frame.
Oh, it's beginning either way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's beginning either way. So either they're going to be out and save the guy, or they're going to be bombed to death. So, yeah. Finally, Sawyer tells him who the spy is, Colonel Phil Parker, which nicknamed Pillbox, with whom Fury served in the Battle of the Bulge. That's an interesting name. Their journey begins at 0300, excuse me. They board a B-17, its payload and most weaponry, that's a hard word to say apparently, removed to make room for extra fuel. Over the North Sea, two Stukas attack. Fury shoots one down with his automatic rifle, which apparently frightens off the other. They refuel in midair.
Yes, they did knock the windows out of their airplane.
Yeah. They refuel in midair over Greenland, Canada, and then Alaska. The plane manages to land on an aircraft carrier in the Pacific. They have traveled 7,500 miles in only 40 hours. Okay, so they should probably already be getting bombed when they get there, or come to chaos with the
I mean, the 36 hours was me pulling a number out of my ass. It was probably more like 54.
True.
Assume a day or so from 72 was wasted by Sawyer. So they've got like a day, which they actually make it in that timeline. So it would work if Stan could stick to a timeline, but he couldn't.
Yeah. To get to Okinawa, they board a submarine. Once near their destination, though, a Japanese destroyer locates them and drops depth charges. The captain cuts the engines. The crew shoot the commanders out through the torpedo tubes and lead the destroyer away from shore.
Interesting historical note there. Stan gets it almost right. Frogman did leave submarines true to torpedo tubes. They're just not fired out of them.
What, you mean they're not shot out like a cannon?
Yes. Possibly when people are in fragile underwater gear and are fragile human beings, setting off explosives behind them to propel them forwards is not the best plan.
Nah, that wouldn't, like, explode their lungs or anything like that or something. I don't know. I ain't a doctor. Fuck. Well, neither is Stan, of course. Once on land, Fury bushwhacks a Japanese officer and gives his uniform to Cohen, of course, Izzy. Dino Minnelli disguises Cohen as a Japanese... That's not proper grammar. As a Japanese man and puts a bandage over his mouth, since he doesn't speak the language. The squad stages up...
But they still took a panel before he had the bandage on to draw him now bucktooth. With
yeah.
A big old gap, just because they had to be racist.
Yes, they sure had to. The squad stages a mock battle so that Izzy can pretend that he has captured them. The ruse works, somehow. The other commanders go into the prison camp, where they meet Colonel Phil Parker. He tells them that Izzy's uniform belongs to Colonel Yamabishi, the camp commander. That's convenient. Since Parker speaks Japanese, he gives orders through Izzy to load all the prisoners on a destroyer for Tokyo. The commanders break out of the brig. Izzy on the bridge and under suspicion, unmasked. When they reach the deck, Fury throws a depth charge at the machine gun, pinning them down and destroyed. They go to rescue Izzy, but he sends the bridge crew tumbling down the stairs. The ship is theirs, and now they rendezvous with the aircraft. With the aircraft carrier. Thank you. Back in England, Fury tells his girlfriend Pamela Hawley about the mission. She says, "Honestly, Nicholas, can't you ever be serious?" That's the end. So,
yes.
Bill, how'd you feel about that one?
mixed emotions. There is an awful lot of wrong with this comic. In fact, I still have two more things to complain about from it. Namely, that depth charge was way 200 pounds. And it's not even ex-circus strongman Dum Dum throwing the thing. And they don't have a single commando unit in the Pacific Theater that could have handled this mission way more timely and with way less risk than bouncing the commandos across the planet with devices that really weren't designed for it, because they have a whole thing about landing the bomber on an aircraft carrier when it's not designed to land a plane that big and stuff.
They had to send the number one crew, of course.
Well, they had to sell a comic book and they wanted to freshen it up. That's what I was getting at with them trying to keep it fresh and actually making things worse.
It would have been fucking incredible if they had actually, like, done the thing where introducing the Pacific Surge and the Pacific Howlers.
They're, like, all exactly the same archetypes, just slightly different.
Just more racist.
Like, Dum Dum's a big guy from American Samoa in this one.
Oh, that would have been crazy.
Although I don't think Stan knows American Samoa exists, so that probably wouldn't have happened.
That's probably true.
But in spite of all the flaws with this one, it was still fun enough to eke into a low 3.
Yeah, I gave it a 3 as well. I didn't enjoy this one as much as the last one, but I still had fun with it. But it was on the line at parts. It was kind of just a chore for a little bit of it. But
I think part of the problem with this one was I had high hopes because I saw they were going to Okinawa. And if that was handled better, it could have been cool to see them in a different environment. But really, being in Okinawa didn't have any effect other than the really racist Japanese characters.
I was just going to say, the only effect it has is it made this the series more racist. There is a note on the wiki here that says, the invasion of Okinawa began on April 1st, 1945. The story, therefore, begins on March 29th, with the original timeline given, I guess that would mean. Or more likely, the 28th. Taking time zones into account. The Surge and Fury story is the first one where the time period can be established so precisely.
It also establishes something else. That Sergeant Fury's comics are not chronological.
Fair. I thought we had kind of established that already, but I might not have just been paying attention.
I think this is the first point when it's explicit, because after the D-Day invasion of... Which actually works to D-Day to this one. That actually works. But these are the only two points we've got dates so far. And the fact that they do a whole lot more in the European theater after this indicates that at least some of those must be flashbacks.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know for a fact that this series becomes like flashback after flashback when it hits like 30-something in, I think, because they bring back Junior.
Okay, I didn't know Junior was going to show back up.
I don't know.
I mean, I knew he had more appearances, but I assumed that was going to be, like, remembering what happened to Junior.
Well, I don't know how long it goes on. It could just be a few issues, but I'm pretty sure there's at least a stretch of flashback issues they do in the 30-somethings or whatever.
Okay, because I knew he turned back up then, but I figured that was probably just the traditional retelling of the origin story.
It could be, for all I know, too. I was just guessing based off what I was seeing. But
yeah. I mean, I do know that their first annual is, like, them in Vietnam, so that one at least breaks continuity.
Yeah. I saw 3, but nothing special. I saw on
this
that
one
note,
got
let us...
the 3 from me is partially based on residual goodwill from previous issues.
Yeah, that's fair too.
Because it was fine, but when you were going over it and I was citing all the mistakes, I was starting to think I should have really given it a 2.
I almost think you should have on the basis you gave the first issue a 2.
Yeah, but I didn't have fun with the first one. That's a big factor.
That's fair. You had some fun with this one, so that also helped get the 3 here for you. But yeah, anyway, let's move on to Tales of Suspense. And, well, I think these issues were really fun as well. But this is issue number 57, the A story, titled Hawkeye the Marksman. So yes, first appearance of Hawkeye, let's fucking go. Everybody's
He's
favorite,
a dick
of course.
From the start.
We got Stan Lee, of course, writing this with Don Heck on art. Love me some Don Heck. Cover art also by Don Heck, which is pretty cool that he got the cover on our show too. And Sam Rose in his own letters. June 1964 is the release date. I was going to say the cover date for a second. 18-page story. And off we go with Bill giving us the synopsis.
All right. I've had a long day, so I'm cheating on this one too.
Old beat up. It's time to take some liberties.
Happy Hogan asks Iron Man to speak to Tony Stark about helping him get a date with Pepper. When Tony tries to suggest the idea to Pepper, she jumps to the conclusion that Stark wants to go on a date with her. Happy sees the two of them and leaves before Tony can rectify the situation, so he reluctantly agrees to take her on a date.
I've got to say, that part is hilarious about... It's hilarious how how dumb Tony was there.
Oh yeah, Tony was like the world's dumbest smart guy in that instant.
How socially inept he was in that moment.
He's supposed to be good with people too. It's not like Peter Parker, who's canonically bad with people.
Exactly.
They visit Coney Island because Tony secretly doesn't want to go to a place that's too romantic, and walk by a marksman being sneered at by his audience. Notably, this is an archery marksman, not an shooting marksman. Shortly after, a pinwheel ride loses control, endangering the lives of the people on it and bystanders alike. Tony excuses himself, claiming to have to make a call to the factory, and suits up as Iron Man. He puts the full power of his armor against the flying pinwheel and stops it. From his stand, the marksman observes with jealousy how Iron Man is getting everyone's attention. I don't know why they keep calling him the marksman in this. He's already established that his name is Hawkeye.
Yeah, I don't really know why either.
It's not a spoiler. Once he returns to his house, the archer uses his basement workshop to make a costume and customized arrow tips. He becomes the costumes adventurer Hawkeye. There we go. Whoever wrote this wiki misunderstood what was happening there. So people would never again sneer at his performance. After leaving the workshop, Hawkeye uses one of his trick arrows to pull himself up to a rooftop from which he witnesses a thief stealing jewelry. He uses an arrow to immobilize the thief to a post and then ropes down to the street. However, the thief managed to escape while Hawkeye was going down and left his loot. When he's inspecting the stolen goods, Hawkeye is spotted by two police officers who mistake him for the thug's partner. Hawkeye decides to flee, thinking the cops would never believe he's innocent. While running, Hawkeye is stopped by a car whose driver lets Hawkeye get in to escape. The driver is none other than the mysterious villainous Black Widow, who captivates Hawkeye with her beauty. As they drive to Black Widow's hideout, she praises Hawkeye and tells him he might be the ally she needs. They arrive at the hideout, and Black Widow leads Hawkeye through a lavishly fashioned estate until they reach a stairway leading them to a laboratory. Hawkeye sees he could use the equipment to build stronger arrowheads and asks the Widow what does she need. Now that he's captivated by her charm, Hawkeye is easily convinced to go up against Iron Man. Meanwhile, in Stark Industries, Iron Man is changing back to his civilian identity, regretting his behavior towards Pepper, and decides to step up his game and take her to a glamorous diner. However, when he arrives to his office, Happy is asking Pepper for a date, and she accepts in order to show Tony that he's not the only fish in the sea, and out of resentment for their date at Coney Island. A short distance away from Stark's factory, Hawkeye uses a suction cup arrow to jump into a van approaching the plant. Once the truck passes through the guarded entrance gate, Hawkeye gets off and pulls himself to a rooftop. He starts using explosive arrows to catch Iron Man's attention. When the Golden Avenger confronts Hawkeye, the archer uses arrows tipped with a chemical that quickly rusts Iron Man's armor upon impact. The hero is forced to flee, leaving behind the rusted parts. By the time Hawkeye reaches the spot where Iron Man had been, he only finds the discarded armor parts and decides to steal them in order to learn the secrets of Stark's tech. In another section of the plant, Stark gets his hands on an emergency armor duplicate, but he's missing his right boot and can't go out without being exposed. He finally finds the boot, which had been left in another area because it needed replating. Now that he's fully armored, Iron Man goes after Hawkeye, having heard a car speed away a few minutes ago. He sees only one car on the road, racing away from the factory, and heavily damages it with an intensified blast from his power ray. Hawkeye is forced to exit the trashed vehicle, and he has run out of rusting fluid arrows to confront his opponent. Iron Man easily repels Hawkeye's attacks with a magnetic repulsor ray, and he tries to power dive onto his enemy at top speed. However, Hawkeye uses an arrow that expands into nylon rope strands and tangles Iron Man up. After breaking free, Iron Man follows Hawkeye to the pier at the edge of LaGuardia Airport and hits the pier Hawkeye is standing on, which sits strength that breaks, ultimately causing Hawkeye to fall into the water. The Golden Avenger retrieves his enemy and leaves him lying on the floor. He turns his back on Hawkeye in order to retrieve the armor parts from Hawkeye's car. Hawkeye was faking being unconscious and fires his most powerful arrow, a demolition blast warhead, at Iron Man. To Hawkeye's surprise, the demolition blast ricochets off Iron Man's armor while still knocking the Golden Avenger down, and it hits Black Widow, who was on the pier waiting for Hawkeye. Fearing that his loved one would be fatally injured, Hawkeye carries Black Widow to the boat and they escape. Iron Man recovers from the staggering blow and decides to give chase. However, the fog gets thick and he remembers he's at the edge of LaGuardia Airport and decides to not go airborne, as it would be a menace to the planes taking off and landing. Also, because of the fog, Iron Man can't recognize the Black Widow as the woman ally of Hawkeye. After returning to his factory, Iron Man changes back to his civilian identity of Tony Stark and decides to trudge through the beach outside of his factory because he has nothing to do but wait for morning. And that's the end.
That sounded a lot less fun in the synopsis.
They went detailed on that one.
Yeah, apparently, like, I don't, is this the person that writes that Hawkeye Mark? Like, what?
I don't think so. It's not exactly a flattering portrayal of Hawkeye.
That's true. It really isn't. Honestly, reading this the first time I read it, I really enjoyed this one. I gave it 4 stars.
I did as well.
I'm actually shocked. I thought you were only going to give it 3.
On a reread, it was a 3. I was a little surprised to see the 4 myself, but I think going through the first time, it's much better than the second time.
It very well could be the case. There's plenty of stories that read like that. I know I was certainly looking forward to seeing Hawkeye's first appearance, so...
I was largely indifferent, to Hawkeye's appearance, because I never really like comic Hawkeye. Which is funny, because I love the MCU Hawkeye. That one's great. But I've never liked Hawkeye in anything I read, and doing this complete read-through has not changed my opinion. If anything, it's made me dislike Hawkeye more.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really a big Hawkeye fan either in terms of comics. I haven't really read any. But yeah, I mean, I still was
interested. Oh, don't worry, you'll hate him in time. Caps Kooky Quartet will take care of that for you.
Probably, yeah. But yeah, I was still interested enough that I was pretty excited. But yeah, yeah. I mean, not really much of note. I mean, if you have any feelings towards Hawkeye, this is definitely one to read. whether they're negative or positive feelings. But yeah.
Oh yeah, this is a major event. Like, whether you like him or not, Hawkeye is a huge character.
I mean, the bonus of Black Widow as well, but of course
that
still
was
not
a pleasant
really...
surprise. I mean, it was spoiled on the cover, but
yeah.
Reading through, I was glad to see her there.
Yeah, and I mean,
used Widow well, despite her terrible design too.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think she's been used pretty well.
She's the most competent woman in Marvel right now.
She is, and to be honest, even when I found the issue she was in, that the second one she was in, to be a little weak, even then, I don't think that it was because of her, really. It was, she's not really the problem, even if the story is a little weak when she's in it.
No, usually the weak stories right now are just, they're going to the same well too often.
Yeah. That's pretty much all I have to say for that one, though, I think. So, B-story time. We love our Watcher stories, so let's get into the first one, titled The Watcher's Power. We got Stan and Larry co-writing. Larry is on Earth. George Russo's on Inks. Don Heck on... Well, of course he's on the cover. Same fucking comic. Artie Simek on letters. And a 5-page story. And we'll hand that over to Bill as well.
Alright. This one will be much quicker to get through. Rajak's space pirates plan to attack a rich planet, thinking the Watcher will not interfere. They are thwarted because they unknowingly targeted the Watcher's homeworld, the one planet that he can interfere with. The Watcher dispatched them to another world. That's what I have. Anything you want to add? Because it's been like 5 years since I've read this comic, and I don't remember what happened in it.
That's so good. That's the best synopsis I've ever heard. That was so to the point.
I mean, it was a 5-page story.
I mean, what's the point really going deeper than that? There's not really any point. It's pretty much, I mean, it's playing with the Watcher's ideals and his morals again. Because you're like, you can't interfere. But then the plot twist comes that it's his homeworld, and
fuck you, you're gone.
I couldn't help but like kind of chuckle to myself reading the story.
It got a 2 from me, so I mean, I was more entertained by that than just about any other Watcher 5-pager.
I gave it a 2 as well. It's a stupid concept that's very in line with the other ones, but the execution's a tiny bit better.
And it worked because they had the previous 2 where he couldn't interfere, that they set it up. So you're expecting, he's not going to interfere again, and something's going to work out so that by Deus Ex Machina, things work out well for this planet anyway. And then you realize, no, it's his planet, and he's just going to fucking destroy you, because when he wants to be, he's one of the most powerful beings in existence.
Yeah.
Actually, I think at this point in time, he is the most powerful being.
There's brilliance and simplicity in the Watcher character that is really cool. And the fact that he's had only these shitty 5 pages to really showcase him is a damn shame.
I have never read something good that's Watcher-based. I mean, I've read individual stories I like, but I mean, like, a series. Probably the closest I've gotten is Original Sin, and he was dead for that.
And a lot of people also don't necessarily consider that good. So that's like...
Oh, it's not!
One.
It's just better than anything else I've read him in.
Nice. I mean, he's always been a background...
It had some good tie-ins.
He's always been a background ensemble character for the most part, though. He's an important character, but it's not really a character you can give his own series in a way. I mean, otherwise you probably do get stories like this. Except
yeah,
I guess
it's really tough to do a series about a character that effectively doesn't have agency.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess let's move on to Tales of Suspense issue number 58, the A story, which is titled Immortal Kombat, not spelled with a K, with Captain America. This one's, of course, Stan Lee. And, oh, Don Heck is joined by Jack for this one for co-artist duties, apparently. Oh, because his boy Cap is here, of course. That's why.
Yeah, Jack had to draw Cap.
Yeah, Jeff, I should have realized right off the bat. Of course, that's why Jack's here. Dick Ayers is on inks here. Cover art by Jack Kirby and Chick Stone. Jack probably literally only drew the parts that Captain America was in. That wouldn't surprise me. August 1964 release date, 18-page story yet again, and I will pass this over to Bill once more. Well, twice,
you know,
more, because we have a watch
story. I
gotta
say, I think the Wikipedia, or your site has, our site has the wrong information.
Oh?
Because the wiki identifies Don Heck as the penciler of the actual story.
I mean, I
think Jack just did the cover.
Jack could have just done the cover. I could see that too. But
hang on a second before I start summarizing this. I'm going to open up the comic.
I don't remember. I don't remember noticing.
I know they put credits on the front page, so I'm just going to open it up and see. Because I have a way to settle this. Yep. Don Heck.
Just Don Heck. Okay. Well, that's an... I mean, this
according
is like his errors all the time.
According to the credits in the comic, and I can see Jack, or Stan not wanting to credit Jack, but I can't see Jack standing for it, so if Jack was there, he would have done it. He would have had credit.
Yeah. I mean, this site has errors all the time, to be fair, so...
Yeah, because it's a fan-made site.
Yeah. And it's a huge project, too, so...
Yeah, and also the stuff we're looking at right now is the earliest stuff that was put on the site.
Yeah, true.
Like, even though there's 25, 30 years of earlier comics, those were all added later because it started with the main order. Anyway, while testing an underwater breeding apparatus, Iron Man drives killer sharks out into the ocean. Once he finishes, he returns to Stark Industries. Right below his flying path, Kraven the Hunter and the Chameleon are smuggling themselves back into the country. When they reach the coast, Kraven begins crawling up a cliff, where he's spotted by Iron Man and easily defeated. However, Chameleon goes unnoticed and takes this as a chance to prove himself superior to Kraven by defeating Iron Man. Inside Stark Industries, Happy shows off his new horrendously flashy plaid jacket to Pepper, but he's met with criticism and sarcastic remarks in one of the best elements of this comic. Pepper shitting all over Happy's jacket was one of my favorite parts of this comic. A heavily wounded Captain America breaks into the building, demanding to see Iron Man. Cap tells Iron Man that whilst walking down the street, he was lured into a building and captured by the Chameleon, posing as an old man. Using an electronic thought transference machine, the Chameleon had acquired Cap's memories and could impersonate him. Cap had been able to recover from the procedure and escape. However, as soon as Iron Man leaves to find the Chameleon, the wounded Captain America smirks and tells himself that his plan has worked. At Avengers Mansion, the Golden Avenger encounters the real Captain America, but Tony attacks, believing him to be the Chameleon. Cap runs away from his friend while trying to reason with him to no avail. Captain America hits Iron Man and he buckles rather easily. Tony recalls that he hadn't had the opportunity to recharge his chest device, and that's why he's weak. Iron Man flees in order to recharge, and Captain America simply brushes off the confrontation, thinking it must have been some sort of prank. A few minutes later, Happy checks on Captain America and finds him gone, so Pepper decides to alert Iron Man. However, Tony is recharging and can't answer the call. Because of that, Pepper decides to find Iron Man herself. When Happy and Pepper borrow one of Stark's cars, they discover a device that acts as a tracer to lead them to Iron Man. Now fully charged, the Golden Avenger spots Captain America walking down the street. Cap is forced to hide in a factory, where he encounters a sentry who initially shoots at him before recognizing his childhood hero. Iron Man breaks through the window and confronts Captain America, still believing him to be the Chameleon. Cap activates a trapdoor below Iron Man, making him fall through a tunnel with gravel. Iron Man escapes from the gravel machine into a room with giant cement mixtures, just as Pepper and Happy arrive at the factory. Their vision is impaired by the cement dust, and Happy blindly walks towards the edge of the gravel pit. Cap grabs Happy's wrist as he is falling to save him, making Iron Man wonder if he's truly the Chameleon. Before anything can be cleared up, Pepper falls into a sand pit and is rescued by Iron Man, but not before Happy accidentally leans on a water valve and drenches her. A steam shovel suddenly threatens Happy and Pepper, but Iron Man easily stops and destroys it with one punch. He wonders how could a shovel move by itself, and Giant Man appears on the scene, making the comic worse. I mean, showing him its operator, another Captain America. As soon as Giant Man releases him, the Chameleon is unmasked, clearing up Iron Man's confusion. The Wasp explains that the ants were witnessing the fight between Captain America and Iron Man, and Giant Man picked up their tone with his cybernetic implants. When they arrived at the scene, they discovered the Chameleon watching the fight from above through a skylight. The police arrive shortly after, and the Chameleon is apprehended. Wasp comments on Pepper's wet and ruined hairdo, and she storms out, angry at Happy. Iron Man and Captain America shake it off, but Tony later scolds himself for being fooled by the Chameleon so easily. And that's the end.
Ta-da. I mean, not as good as the last issue, but it was fine.
It was still good. Yeah, I gave it 3 as well. It probably would have scored higher if they actually caught the Chameleon themselves instead of just having Giant Man do it off-panel.
Yeah.
That really annoyed me on the reread, that the villain just got captured off-panel.
Yeah, oh well, though. I don't know. I just, as soon as the Chameleon was the villain, I just wasn't expecting much from this. As soon as I found that out, so.
No, like I said, yeah. This whole thing's just an ad for the fact that they're putting Captain America in the book next month.
Which is fine, because I like Captain America. How long will that last? Who knows?
His first stories are rough.
Probably. I'll find out soon enough. Well, maybe. We'll see. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say for that one. So, on to what a great time this is. The last Watcher story. Last 5-pager for the Watcher. Titled, The Watcher Must Die. Well, we don't know if he will yet, but his story sure are. Stan
You're
Lee.
Probably going to need to add to this one.
Okay.
But let me do the synopsis first, because it's fucking hilarious.
Stan Lee is the writer here. George Tuska is the artist. That might
There's
be his first
There's a name we haven't
here.
Seen much yet.
Yeah. Jack Kirby, Chick Stone, oh, of course, cover artist. Artisemic letters. And a 5-page story. And let's hear what I assume is a very detailed synopsis.
Oh, it's possibly the most detailed one we got, ever. An alien warlord attacks the Watcher and is instantly destroyed by accelerated aging. I'm done now.
I think they just came up with the Watcher stories.
They've never had good synopses for these.
That's so good. I mean, yet again, I don't really need to go in depth, but I mean, there is a little more. The Watcher really. I think this is the one where the Watcher almost, you kind of see a bit more of the savage side to him, and he's a little more, is a little more vengeful. He like, oh yeah, because they try to take, it's his planet, they try to take his planet or whatever, and.
No, they tried to kill him directly.
Try to kill him directly, that's right. Because he must
And
die,
it was a
yeah.
weapon, I think it was a weapon that, if I remember, it's been a long time since I read these. Because I used to work in a comic shop where I could swipe these from the boss's sale rack and read them there because they're not online.
Yeah.
At least not on the illegitimate side of the web because I didn't have a Marvel Unlimited subscription. I sure wasn't going back when I did. But I think they shot him with a weapon that was supposed to accelerate aging to kill him, and he reflected it on them because he could also make sure that nothing interfered with him.
I
think that's this one, or I'm thinking of something else.
Well, I've read a lot
of shitty five-page sci-fi stories.
Yeah, I think they just had some plan to kill him. I don't know if it was the age. I think because he gets mad, and he's his way of solving the issue is he reveals that he accelerated the time in the exact spaces like that they encapsulated. Because I think they had a ray that was a different kind of weapon, but he brought out the accelerated agent that was only in the proximity of where they were.
Like, okay, yeah, I was probably just attributing to Stan the kind of karmic revenge he likes to get in his stories.
Yeah. I mean, I just read this semi-recently, and it's a five-page shitty Watcher story. I retained enough of it, but not all of it. So that's just what I can pull out of my ass right now.
I mean, apparently it wasn't that shitty. I gave it 2 stars when I first
I gave it, it one. I hated this one. I really hate this one, and I can't even tell you why anymore. I really did not like this when I read it.
Part of my joy might have just been the knowledge that it was the last Watcher story.
That could be the case, too.
Because yeah. I was not enjoying these Tales of the Watcher. I actually preferred the stupid sci-fi stories that were repackaged as stories told by the Wasp more than the Watcher stories.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah, no, I'm so glad these Watcher stories are done. What a way to go out. I hated this one. I can't even fully tell you why. I don't know. It might have been in part because the Watcher was a bit of a dick. That might have been part of it, but I don't know. I mean, they were trying to kill him.
I probably liked it just because the Watcher actually did something in it.
Possibly. But yeah, that's all I'm going to say, really, because I can't even remember it fully. But that was an incredible synopsis. let's move on to the main event of this episode, which is, of course, the Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 1. The very first Amazing Spider-Man Annual. Titled The Sinister Six. Titled The Sinister Six. Which, yes, very important issue. of course, this is done by Stan Lee and it's Steve Ditko almost exclusively until we get to the letters, which are done by Sam Harrison. June 1964 release date. A 41-page story. Holy shit. And I will take this one to close us out today. I will say, they tease throughout this issue multiple times in, like, bubbles and stuff that this issue took them the better part of a year or whatever, but... Yeah.
They're lying.
They're lying for sure, because they had just announced it, like, only within the last 5 issues or so of Amazing Spider-Man in the letters columns that they were starting to work on it.
Yeah, also,
they're
like,
full on lying.
Half this comic is an advertisement for the other titles.
Also, if it was a year, it would have been for most of Spider-Man's title. A lot of these characters...
Peter's advanced enough in his life that they had to have had most of these issues written before this point.
Yeah. But anyways, let us begin. Having broken out of prison, Dr. Octopus gathers Mysterio, Electro, Kraven the Hunter, the Vulture, and Sandman to get revenge against Spider-Man as the Sinister Six. I will say right away, that's the original lineup is the lineup I just said. Interestingly, because a lot of people do tend to throw the Green Goblin with the Sinister Six, he is not in the first lineup.
Nope.
Meanwhile, Spider-Man has once more found that his spider powers have faded and has to exercise more caution getting back home, lest someone take advantage of his lost powers to find out his secret identity.
I did enjoy the bit with him hanging off the end of the flagpole and the Fantastic Four sailing by and talking shit to him.
That was a highlight for me for this issue. I have a few highlights, actually, which I'll talk about as we go. Honestly, the main story is what I was let down by. There was a lot of the stuff going on the side that I actually did enjoy. As Peter wanders the city, lost in thought over all the stress caused by a Spider-Man identity, he doesn't go to school. The which apparently is the first time he's ever skipped school. This prompts
In character, so I believe that.
Yeah. For this point in Spider-Man, he's not been Spider-Man for that long at this point, it probably really is. This prompts the school to call his Aunt May. Worried about Peter, she goes to Betty Brant for help, and they, in turn, see if J. Jonah Jameson has seen Peter recently. So Aunt May goes to Betty Brant because she's like trying to figure out what's wrong with Peter. And she's like, well, maybe something happened with that Betty girl he's been seeing. But anyway, I feel like I had to throw context in there because it doesn't... Yeah. It's because May's like, May goes for a few reasons of what could be going on. This makes them a target
May's
for the...
May's senility is strong in this one.
It really is. This makes them a target for the Sinister Six, who have decided to use Betty Brant as bait to lure Spider-Man. And so they kidnap both Betty and Aunt May, because they're like, well, Betty's with an old woman, let's just kidnap her too. That's literally what happens. They're like, it don't matter.
Yeah, they just kidnap May and give her, like, tea and cookies.
Yeah. Peter arrives at the Daily Bugle just in time to see the Vulture delivering a message to Jameson. The Vulture tells him that the Sinister Six have gone to six different locations, and at each location, they each have a clue to the whereabouts of Betty and May. Well, superheroes all over the city...
I'm just gonna cut in there, because they misrepresented that a bit. They don't have a clue to the location of May and Betty, which would allow Peter to potentially solve the mystery first. They just have the address of the next person that he has to go fight.
Yeah, they only have the that is true. They only have the address of the next location to fight the next guy until he gets to the end. So when he is then given the address, the last place where he'll fight the last villain, where they are. But I can see why they kind of shortened that.
Yeah, they didn't really flesh out what Otto's plan was, though, which was that since each of them came close to beating him, they'd just kind of wear him down through attrition, and eventually one of them would take him out.
Yeah, coordinated attack. But let's not attack him at once. That's just cheap. So we'll take him on one at a time. At least they have some honor, you know?
They've learned from numerous 80s action movie goons. You always surround the person you want to fight, and then attack him one at a time so he can easily beat you up.
Exactly. Perfect. Where the hell was I? Superheroes all over the city try to find Spider-Man. Peter decides that powers or no powers, he's going to save his Aunt May and Betty from his enemies. Pretty in character there. At the first location, the local power plant owned by Stark Industries, Peter faces Electro. During the fight, he realizes that his powers have returned. He easily Okay, we're not going to skip over... we're not going to skip over that synopsis. He doesn't just realize that his powers have returned. He realizes that it was probably all in his head the whole time.
Well, of course, he didn't have a cold, which, as everyone knows, is the way to take away Spider-Man's powers.
Of course. I forget the exact phrase that Stan wrote in for Peter to say, but it was hilarious. I know I used it on you right away. But anyways.
Hang on a second.
Okay.
Must be on the previous page.
I remembered it. Psychosomatic. Psychosomatic. That's it.
Yeah, I thought you said that already. I thought you were looking for, like, a particular actual, like, stupid phrase he said. But, yeah, it was all psychosomatic.
No, I didn't say the phrase, but I just was remembering when I said it to you, but I couldn't remember what it was. He easily defeats Electro, unsurprisingly, and learns the next location. When Iron Man arrives to offer help, Spider-Man refuses. As you do, why get help in a handicap match? His next fight is with Kraven the Hunter, who attacks Spider-Man in Central Park with three tigers. Spider-Man easily fights off the attackers and secures the next clue. Along the way, the Human Torch offers help, but once again, Spider-Man refuses.
Yeah, Torch shows up twice because they have to plug his Strange Tales stories as well as the Fantastic Four book.
The funniest thing about this annual is they bring in every fucking character to plug their title, and it's hilarious.
I love that. Like, it's logically, it's bad for the story, but it was so forced that I just started looking forward to the cameos of the various people so that Stan could write a little blurb about how they appear courtesy of the authors of X book. That's him.
I almost fucking died laughing with how they squeezed the X-Men in. I was just waiting to see how they were going to do it.
And then they get the actual X-Men as well, just randomly.
Yeah. His next location is controlled by Mysterio, who sends androids based on the X-Men. Funny, we were just talking about that. To Dr. Wallcrawler. Spider-Man easily defeats the androids and Mysterio. The next clue is... oh my god, been a long day. The next clue is set ablaze, but Spider-Man recovers its contents with his red fluid. His next battle is against Sandman. Oh god. This is against Sandman.
Before we get to Sandman, there's a great moment that your synopsis omits that I kind of wish Dan was here for.
Oh, is this the J.J. Jameson bit?
Yes, where Jonah gets so desperate to find Betty that he thinks that since Ant-Man can talk to ants, Spider-Man must be able to talk to spiders, and starts having a fucking conversation with a spider that's dangling in front of his window whilst his staff watches him and thinks he's gone insane.
That's one of the other highlights. I love the stuff with Jonah.
Jonah's whole arc in this was just priceless.
Incredible. Oh my god. See, I had that in my mind to bring up, but I couldn't remember when it took place. So if I didn't come up, I was just going to bring it up in the end. I'm so glad you brought that up, though. I love that part. That's my favorite part.
Well, I was looking right
issue.
At the panel of Jonah talking to the spiders earnestly.
That was my favorite part of the whole issue. That was so good. I wish Dan was here for that. His next battle is against Sandman, sealed in an airless room. Well, they gave away the twist of what goes... But anyway, Spider-Man defeats Sandman with a superior lung capacity.
That... Okay, I have to interrupt here to bury my co-host. We were discussing this in a group chat as they read this comic. And Ryan was halfway through the Sandman fight. And we were making a crack about the Sandman from wrestling, who I said was I didn't know which one of them was dumber, to which Ryan goes, I think the wrestling Sandman is dumber, and I'm like, you haven't finished that fight yet. And then immediately, Ryan finishes the fight about Sandman suffocating himself with the damn iron box he built that didn't have any air holes.
The best part about the whole thing, too, is I was halfway through the page. I just had to read a few more panels, and I wouldn't have embarrassed myself.
That was so good when you were, like, trying to claim that that Sandman was actually decently smart, and then he suffocates himself.
Oh, my, that's one of
He's
the best...
He's the only one of the Sinister Six that beat himself.
It's one of the best moments we've ever had in this group chat. Just the coincidence of something timing.
Yeah, the timing
was
so
incredible.
Perfect, because I knew you were already in the Sandman fight.
Oh, fuck. Okay, back to the synopsis, I guess.
And then because the synopsis is not going to mention this, I'm sure, we get another great Jonah moment where he realizes that while he was freaking out, every single other newspaper has published stories about Spider-Man fighting with all these supervillains, and he's missed them all.
Yeah, it completely skips over Jonah's subplot in this, understandably, but it's...
Yeah,
it's
not relevant to
stuff.
The story, but it's the best parts.
Yeah. Next...
That and Aunt May beginning her crush on Ock.
Which also hasn't been mentioned here. Literally, the stuff that's good about this issue has not been mentioned.
I'll disagree with you about that, but we'll get to that when we talk about our opinions on this issue.
Next, he battles the Vulture high over the city and defeats him as well, gaining the location of Dr. Octopus, who has been holding Betty and May hostage. May, completely oblivious to her situation, believes they are Octavius' house guests. That's, yeah.
That's actually sure. Perfect.
That's pretty
accurate.
Because
that's exactly what happened. She had no clue how much danger she was in.
Spider-Man battles Octopus in his mechanical arms. Their fight takes them to a giant fishbowl where Octopus battles Spider-Man in his natural habitat. End quotes. And that's the part where I lost it. This is where the comic lost the plot for me. Spider-Man defeats Octopus by filling the tank with... I didn't even remember how he won, because I really just read and didn't care what was going on. By filling the tank with his weapon and tangling Octavius up. And he then frees Aunt May and Betty Brant. After returning to a civilian guise, he meets up with the pair. Aunt May remains upset with Peter over his skip in class. Jameson is once more made a fool when he has to publish a story about how heroic Spider-Man is. And as for the Sinister Six, forced to share a prison cell, the film squabble amongst themselves. The end. I mean...
So, what did you think of this one, Ryan? I'm going to let you go first, because I feel like my opinions are best presented in rebuttal form.
You know, I never told you what I actually rated this issue. I was, for most of it, leaning more of a 3, but I let the good parts convince me to give this a 4. Historical significance. I let it play a part after all, and I said I wasn't going to, but I let it because it's the Sinister Six and it's Spider-Man. But the other reasons I let it slip to a 4 was the subplots. I just really enjoy between Aunt May and Octavius. I didn't necessarily love the execution in all of its form in this issue, but I loved seeing how that began, because I didn't know. And also, the Jonah stuff was just fucking priceless. Jonah's subplot is hilarious throughout this
Jonah
issue.
Jonah and Aunt May were both hilarious in this.
Yes.
And for me, this was a full 5-star. I adore this comic.
I don't love the main story of this. I personally was expecting better. I don't know. I probably shouldn't have been, but I was expecting better here for some reason.
I really liked seeing what happens when Peter actually cuts loose. Because that's the thing. Canonically, Spider-Man is one of the most powerful heroes in the Marvel Universe. He just always holds back.
Yeah.
So when you get those rare moments when he actually does cut completely loose, he is capable of beating just about anyone in his rogues gallery in like one page.
Yeah, I didn't, honestly, considering there were 6 villains to take on and the time to get to that point, I was kind of happy they were quick battles in a way.
Yeah,
although...
I was worried coming in that this was just going to be a slog of repetitive battles, but instead he just defeated everyone in like a splash page and it was all about the journey.
It did feel a little quick in parts, especially when I think Elektra was like the longest fight, maybe minus Octopus. But
No, Elektra was the longest fight in it.
I felt like, maybe.
He also had to be the most clever to beat Elektra, because he hooked a ground wire onto himself so he couldn't be electrocuted.
Fair. I don't think it works that way.
I think you still get electrocuted if the electricity goes through you into a ground wire.
It goes through you. I just think it isn't as lethal.
Yeah, because the ground wire, like the way a ground wire traditionally works, is it's on something else, so the electricity goes into that instead of you.
Yeah, like you.
Peter puts it on his own anchor.
I think you still would feel immense pain, but it probably would have like not killed you, which is good.
Yeah, but he no-sold that electricity like he was Hulk Hogan 3 seconds before a leg drop.
Yeah, it was still not realistic, but yeah.
No, and I think that was just Stan not understanding the science.
Probably. When does he understand the science? But
Not very often.
The other part, I almost forgot to mention, the other reason I let this slip too, you reminded me of mentioning the battles. The other reason why I let this slip before as well, because... I love Steve Ditko's art in this issue.
Oh,
my golly,
the splash
does he have some
pages
beautiful
were so good.
Fucking art. Oh my god, his splash pages were fucking beautiful. Oh,
they
Steve
were
Ditko.
A big feature for me giving it a 5. Was just those splash panels. It was like, it was 4 until I got to that splash panel of him fighting Electro. And then I was starting to buy in. And when they did it for every one of the Sinister Six, I was...
Steve Ditko, bless his soul. What a guy. What an artist.
And this book focused on the stuff Ditko does well.
Yeah.
Because, like, Strange sometimes, Ditko's art lets it down. Like, he's great at the trippy stuff where he goes to another dimension or so. But when he tries to keep Strange in the real world, it's kind of boring and flat because Strange doesn't do the fight choreography that he's really good at.
Yeah.
At least not yet. In the future, Strange will be perfectly willing to grab a battle axe and just start breaking heads. But no, I absolutely... This is one of my favorite comics I read up to... This is my favorite comic I read up to this point in the reading order.
Wow. That's saying a lot. I would not say it's close to even... I probably not even top 10 for me, to be quite honest.
You know, that's fair. I can see where you're coming from with your 4. I thought you were going to be a lot harder on this, and I was prepared to fight for it. But I can accept the 4. You're closer to the site average than I am.
I was going to be harder on it, and it's almost incredible I didn't stick to my 3, considering how much I hated the octopus bit. But, yeah, I hated the octopus bit. I didn't like doing the Peter loses his powers again so soon. And also the fucking psychosomatic part. That, I don't know, that just, I didn't get over with me. I got a good laugh out of the squeezing every character in, but it was kind of annoying and was not good for the...
I think that's the difference. I just bought in completely on that, and I'm like, how are they going to get someone else in? And then when Torch showed back up after he had already been there because he had to plug his other book, I was like almost cheering because it was so dumb that I just decided I liked it.
See, I enjoyed it. When Fantastic Four, that was hilarious, great bit. Then they started doing every other character. I'm like, okay, this is
I hated,
like,
Doctor Strange, this, I will say that. The way to work Strange in was so terrible.
The story is just... The flow of the story is just being affected at this point. But then, it was a little bit. I kind of get a kick a little bit out of Giant Man's appearance, just because here, if he was like, oh, it was talking about how he was just a hero and now he's a regular civilian, whatever. That worked enough. But then I get interested again just to see how the fucking X-Men would fit in, because it's like, how the fuck are you going to squeeze the X-Men into this? But, I don't know.
The way they actually appeared was they just saw some of the news reports about it.
Yeah, which ended up being a bit of easiest way to throw them in, really. But yeah, I think that's most of the points of why I didn't love this. I think.
Well, I got some bad news for you. This is probably the best annual that will ever happen.
Oh, nice.
Because very quickly, they're either Fantastic Four, which tend to be a key milestone event that pulls it all together, or just awful and long.
Okay, I feel like off the top of my head, annuals that could be better that I haven't read, but in terms of historical significance could be better, is possibly Reed and Sue's wedding or Mary Jane and Peter's wedding. Those are the two that come to mind that could be.
Haven't gotten anywhere close to Mary Jane and Peter's wedding for my read-through. Reed and Sue's wedding is...
not that good.
Not great.
Okay, so my hope's gone.
The whole joke... I might as well just tell you this. The whole joke with Reed and Sue's wedding is literally everyone in the Marvel Universe at that point shows up at it.
Yeah, I knew that much anyway, so it's not even a spoiler.
And so it's just nothing but one-panel jokes of various heroes fighting various villains.
Oh, so it's just
and the joke is they're all... It's like the Spider-Man moment.
It's the Spider-Man
joke. But worse, because it doesn't have the story to tie it together. The story just is all these little fights happening.
Oh, I'm going to hate that.
I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it either. Like, I enjoyed it fine. It was a fast read, but it was nowhere near as good as this one.
Yeah, that'll probably be a solid 3 or something just off that.
Yeah, I think it was a 3 for me, but I'm not going to go digging through trying to find it to see what I rated
it. Fair enough. Quite a ways away. Anyway, let's get into the bonus segments for the month, I suppose. I didn't even think about the poll list. I literally don't think the poll list changed again this month.
The poll list didn't change for me.
I don't think there's any new titles, and the titles have stayed about the same. Thor having the one disappointing issue isn't enough to get it kicked off the poll list. Now, if it was to continue on a downward spiral, I would consider taking it off.
Yeah. Yeah, my pull list doesn't change. None of the titles really changed in quality.
I mean...
Fury... For me, Fury is the one that's in danger of getting kicked. Because they've had two issues that I didn't like nearly as much as I thought. Maybe three in a row, because wasn't it the trial, then capturing Hitler, then...
No.
Or is there another
one? You're missing on the Zemo one. After the
oh
trial.
Yeah, I like the Zemo one, but then so it was still two disappearing or disappointing issues in a row. But neither of those were bad enough that I'd kick it. It's just to the point where I'm like, I'm not excited for Fury anymore.
Yeah, I still am, but we'll see how long that lasts. Because I understand where you're coming from too. I think it's different enough and still enjoyable enough in terms of team dynamic that I could see it lasting for a while before I get truly tired of it, but we'll see. We'll see.
From what I understand, it pulls it back up pretty good. Like, well, I think hopefully. This is a bit of a low point for it.
It very well could be. Yeah. I think the annual is supposed to be decent for the first one.
The annual is supposed to be really good, I think, but I don't know if I'm going to like it just because it's so different. It's like them trying to be topical. Because when I realized I said earlier Vietnam, it's Korea they're in, not Vietnam. Because, of course, Vietnam won't happen for another 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. I guess for the... we did the pull list, so on to the best and worst of the month.
Give us a quick rundown.
Yeah, give us a quick rundown.
We started this month with Avengers 7, which was the Enchantress and the Executioner teaming up with Baron Zemo. And then we had Strange Tales 123, The Birth of the Beetle, where they added Thing to the story and gave us a mediocre Spider-Man villain. And then the B story was Doctor Strange and the Challenge of Loki with Doctor Strange versus Loki. Then we had Fantastic Four 29. It started on Yancey Street with the return of the Red Ghost. Amazing Spider-Man 15 with Kraven the Hunter. Daredevil number 3 with the Owl. Fury number 9 when they tried to capture Hitler. Daredevil 4 with Kilgrave. Spider-Man 16 where he fights Daredevil at the circus. Tales to Astonish 59 with the Hulk. Journey into Mystery number 108. Another Loki story. And the B story was Trapped by the Trolls, where they tried to do something clever with Tales of Asgard, but spoiled it in the intro, or in the teaser from the previous month, so it didn't really work. And then the stuff we covered today.
Yeah. So to start off with our worst, of course, so we end on the high note, hypothetically. Fuck, did I have my worst pick there? I don't even remember. You go first, because I got to refresh myself now.
This was a tough month, because there was nothing I truly hated that wasn't like a 5-page story that I don't like giving the worst to, because they're so easy to get through. So I ended up giving it to Journey into Mystery 108.
Fair.
Just because I've read that exact Loki story like 6 times before.
Yeah, that's the one I came up with earlier today. I just remembered I was thinking about it on the walk home, and I came to the conclusion that I was going to give it to the A story of 108 as well. It's just disappointing. I just want more. That's really it.
It wasn't, nothing about that story was bad on its own. It was just, they've done it so many times now, I wish they'd do something new. So that's kind of a good sign. This month we struggled to find a true worst of.
Well, there wasn't really a lot of awful this month, to be honest.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's a good sign. Like, the only other contender for me was Giant Man fighting the Hulk, and I liked that story. Like, it was boring compared to a lot of the others.
It was...
Giant Man isn't very well written.
It was either that one or the Beetle for me. Those are the two contenders.
Yeah,
for me,
the Beetle is the other one. I liked the Beetle story fine too.
See, I didn't like that one as much as you, but the Thor story just hit different on being disappointing. We'll move on to our best of the month now, which I'm also going to let you go first here, considering we fucking know what yours is going to be. But
yeah,
I'm going to probably surprise
you with mine. It's Amazing Spider-Man Annual number one. I let the cat out of the bag that's my favorite comic up to this point.
Yeah.
There's other stuff that's more important and like, probably more powerful storytelling, like the initial Spider-Man 1 and Amazing Adult Fantasy 15 combo was a more impactful story emotionally, but just for sheer comic reading fun, this is probably the most fun I've had so far.
Fair. Man, I mean, I know what my best is. It's just kind of fucked that honestly, the annual of Amazing Spider-Man is only in third or fourth place for me even this month. Because you didn't enjoy this one as much as me, but I just had a lot of fun with this one, so this is my best of the month. And that is Surgeon Fury and his Hound Commandos issue number 9, where they capture Hitler, in quotes.
I can't argue with that one, because it was decent. I think the only reason I didn't, like, I've got it as kind of disappointing for me, was I got it in my head about what the hell are they doing walking into a speech by Hitler.
It's a trap.
With Gabe, and not one person goes, hey, he doesn't look Aryan.
Yeah, that was annoying, but yeah.
I figured you were picking this one, actually.
Really? Well, I guess. I'm really a mark for Sergeant Fury at this point, but
yeah, and I knew how much you liked it when you read it.
Yeah. I don't know. I had a lot of fun with it. My other choices before or with the annual of Amazing Spider-Man were going to either be... I just had it in my mind. It was either going to be Daredevil 4, because I love the Purple Man, and I just had fun with that one, too. Or... what was my other one that I really enjoyed here?
Hawkeye. I'll tell you my run. I was going to say that was going to be my runner-up was Hawkeye. I really liked Hawkeye, like the first time through. The second time, it wasn't as good. I think just because I've read so many more of the '60s comics now that some of the things that become repetitive later on are now starting to irritate me when they first show up.
Yeah,
like the three-way romance between Tony, Pepper, and Happy that goes on for a while. It got really tiresome. And so seeing them doing it, it feels like I've already seen a ton of it, even though I know from doing the podcast that this is pretty much the first time it shows up. It's just like, oh god, this again.
Fair. Honestly, really.
Yeah, and I had the same thing with the Captain America one with Tony's chest piece, because they lean on Tony's chest piece a lot running out of power.
Oh, yeah. I was going to mention that today when you were reading the second story there, and I just left it alone.
Yeah, I was going to mention it too, and then I've got it, because it just... especially there, because it was so pointless. There was no reason for him to have that issue. He could have just as easily missed Pepper's call because he was fighting with with Captain America.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Good old Stan.
A lot of that stuff gets a bit of a pass just because it's the golden or the silver age, and that sort of shit was everywhere in the silver age.
Yeah, it was, to be fair.
Yeah, like we shit on Stan a lot because this is a Marvel podcast, and so Stan writes pretty much everything at this point. But if we were doing DC, we'd have the exact same complaints about stuff they were doing, because this was just comics of the time.
Yeah, that's valid. That truly is valid.
Yeah.
Well, I guess
anyway, we might as well run down what we have next.
Yeah, let's run down next week's. I'm totally haven't been rearranging my future episodes that I have had set up because I realized I didn't have the Amazing Spider-Man annual slotted for this week, so we could have technically skipped it. But you know, whatever.
That would have been an awful short week if we were ending after suspense.
Yeah, that's why I added it on. even though it was a long story. But anyways, next week we'll see the return of everybody. Oh my god, everybody's favorite Merry Mutants with X-Men issue number 7 returning here. With speaking of returns, the Blob's back.
This is a pretty key issue of X-Men, actually.
Great plug on my part. Speaking of key issues, this might not really be that important. It kind of is important because it's the first time Thor faces Magneto in Journey in the Mystery issue number 109, the A story. And in the B
story... Importantly, he's not Loki.
Yes. Thank God. And the B story is titled Banished from Asgard, so that should be fun. Strange... I don't know what else to
say. Spoiler. It's my least favorite Tales of Asgard.
Oh, nice. Can't wait.
I think of all of them, because I can't recall another one I gave less than 3 stars to. And this one got 2.
After that, we returned the Strange Tales with issue number 124. Speaking of returns again, our favorite, Triple P, Pastepot Pete is back. Let's fucking go. And then we get a B story with Doctor Strange titled The Lady from Nowhere. So, interesting. I don't know what the fuck to say about that.
No matter what you think it's going to be, I guarantee you it's dumber.
Okay, nice.
I actually somewhat like this story. But, oh my god, is the reveal dumb.
But then... To end this off, for our main event next week, it is Fantastic Four, issue number 30, with the debut of Diablo.
This is an interesting one.
I feel like this is an interesting week.
It is. It's a very weird week. Like, every one of these issues we're covering this week, almost, I really want to not like.
A lot of them except have bad average ratings.
No, they're decent stories. But they're very, very Silver Age.
Yeah. I have not read any of these yet, so I can't even give any teasers of my impressions. Yeah. Really.
The big one for this week is definitely X-Men 7.
Yeah.
That one has some pretty monumental stuff happening for the X-Men canon.
I'm very intrigued to read it now, and I wasn't excited, so I'm kind of glad that you've...
Cerebro. It's the first appearance of Cerebro.
Okay, yeah, okay. I'm down to read it now.
And they graduate.
Ooh. Well, let's not reveal anymore, and we'll save it for next week.
I haven't revealed anything that's not on the cover.
Well, I haven't looked at the cover. I haven't read the cover, I should say.
If it's on the cover, it's not a spoiler.
Fair. Well, if you...
At least from me, I can complain about Stan putting spoilers on the fucking cover.
Yeah.
But I'm not spoiling anything if I'm telling you something that you see without even opening the book.
Fair enough. Well... Hope you've enjoyed the podcast, folks, that don't... the whole series of people that watch this, whatever. If you're watching on YouTube, please...
10 or so.
Fair. If you... I've actually noticed a few slowly going up a little bit recently, so that's cool. If you're watching this on YouTube, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, even share if you would like to. Of course, we are available on Google... We're available nowhere. We're available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and of course, Spotify. And if you're on Spotify, click that poll and tell us why the Watcher stories are your favorite.
Anyway, please do, then we can block you for being a psychopath.
Yeah, you don't deserve to listen to the podcast. But anyway, guys, we'll see you all next episode.
And have
hopefully we'll see you soon for the bonus episode as well. And peace out.